like the alcoholic.
Our speaker, I'm not allowed to sit next to her at meetings. If you've seen us for the last 5 minutes, you know why we've become like small school children. No, but I've known Lindsay 3 months since she got here. My mom's sponsor, when she first got sober, and I've just watched the lights come on. I've seen her take meetings in facilities, sponsor people, be sponsored in a really inspiring way. She serves on committees to help this program remain the way that it is, and I'm just really proud to introduce our speaker, Lindsay W. or Y. Sorry.
Hey guys, my name is Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, there's way more people standing up than there is sitting down. So yeah, but I'm not nervous though, because all of y'all are my family. And I really feel I can look around and see everybody's faces, and other than like 3 or 4, I know all of y'all, and all of y'all have played a really important part in my sobriety. My sobriety date is May 14th, 2014. A little bit of background story about my family, real quick, is that I know we can't call anybody addicts or alcoholics. So, my grandparents like to drink a lot and do heroin. But I'm not pointing fingers, okay? My mom also likes to drink a lot and do crystal meth. So, like, the same. So it's like riddled throughout my family. And that comes with a lot of dysfunction. I was born in Conroe, Texas, on accident. My mom was living in Georgia. She was 16, and she went to Texas to visit her dad, and she went to labor early. So I was born there, and I stayed there for 3 months, and we moved back to Georgia. And that kind of explains like my whole childhood. Every 3 months or so, we would move. Sometimes it was shorter than that. Sometimes we would get into a town, and it would be like 2 or 3 weeks. From the time I was born until I was, I think the first year that I lived somewhere for a whole year, I was in ninth grade, and I moved again, and so actually being sober, this is the longest time that I've lived anywhere, for this amount of time, and it's really cool, because I have, like, a hairdresser that, like, knows me, and, like, the people know my name at the juice shop, and, like, all those weird little things. It's really cool, because I never had that. And so I grew up with, like, a lot of weird habits. Like, I don't remember feeling different or, like, feeling like I was, like, this like, weird, cool little kid who was like, everybody's just wonderful and, like, be who you are and blah, blah, blah. But I did some weird things. Like, me and my cousin, I was, like, 8 or 9, and we would snort Smarties. And but what's interesting is we knew to pick out the white ones, and like we'd eat the colored ones, but like we'd pick out the white ones and we'd smoke Smarties. I remember getting my butt busted because I like rolled up a piece of paper like a telescope, and I cut it in half and like gave my cousin a piece, and then I lit it on fire and inhaled it, and like I blistered the inside of my mouth, and so we got caught with like residue of Smarties on the table. So yeah, I'd always kind of had these weird things, right? Like, I was already learning some, like, pretty messed up tools. I just didn't have the actual substance or drink in my system. But I, you know, like I said, I learned to adapt really quickly. I learned how to make friends really quickly. But I also learned how to lie really quickly. Because every time I moved, I could be something other than what I was. And my mom was really poor. Life was really shitty. I didn't know that at the time, but I just knew that I didn't have the same kind of things that other kids had. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to be here very long. Like, so let's make this interesting. You know, and I would tell, like, ridiculous, grandiose lies about, like, my life and, like, my parents and all this stuff. Also, my dad, I don't know my biological father, but the person I call dad died when I was 5. He was a roughneck working in the old rig, the old field. And, he got killed when I was 5 in Texas, and so that's where he's buried at. And so yeah, it was pretty much just me and my mom, and then sometimes there would be like random men, and we would be bouncing all over the country, just like, and I thought it was so cool. I thought, well, you know, I'm experiencing all kinds of cool things. And my first drink was, I mean, besides like I would steal wine coolers at 8 o'clock at night and like smoke Marlboro Reds at 8 years old. and wake up and tell my mom. My mom was like, you want to try my wine cooler? And I was like, I drank two yesterday. You know, and she would laugh and think it was cute. And then I remember, like, sneaking scotch from the counter, like, underneath the sink at my grandparents' house. And I'd have those cool cups that were made out of plastic, but they looked like these fancy adult cups. And I poured water with my scotch, and I was walking around the house while people were awake, like, drinking it. And it's interesting because still, even then, like, everything that I did revolved around alcohol. Like, it was so cool. Like, having that cup made me so cool. Like, I felt like my cousins liked me better. And, you know, I'm so bad. Like, I'm dangerous, you know? And like, my mom would give me NyQuil, and I would fight it. And she's like, Lindsay, go to sleep. And I'm like, NyQuil is so good. You know? And, so, yeah, I was definitely weird. I also had, like, would go to the dentist a lot, and I knew that if I cried, they would give me funny gas. And I got funny gas so much, I had my own personal take-home nose thing, you know? And me and my cousin would be playing, and we'd be running around the house. And I would need, like, a quick break, and I'd run to the bathroom, and I'd slide across the floor, and I'd take that nose thing out, and I'd be like, holding it against my face. I don't know why. It's because it smelled like the dentist's office, like, when I would get messed up, you know? And, but I was 13 when I had my first real drunk. And, I was a blackout drinker from the gate. I was in the floor, like, there was probably like 5 or 6 of us. And, I was in the floor with a bottle, like, I was the bartender, but we only had coffee cups, right? And, so I would, like, pour a shot, and I'd be like, who wants a drink? And I'd be like, no, I'm good right now. So I'd take a few, and then I'd offer another one, and they'd turn it down. So I blacked out, I passed out, I puked, I rolled in it. They had to give me a bath, and so they stripped me down. I fell forward, busted my head open on the sink. I woke up the next morning with, like, damp hair and clothes I'd never seen before in a bed by myself. And I was like, and I had this huge gash on my head. And I was like, what happened? So I went and I woke everybody up, and I thought it was the coolest thing in my whole entire life. And I was like, yes! I was just meant to do this. Like, I found it, you know? And so a couple months later, I got drunk again. The same thing happened. I blacked out, I passed out, I puked, I rolled in it. And my friends had to give me a bath, different friends, because I was in a different state at this point. And that kind of freaked me out a little bit, but not really enough to, the only reason it freaked me out is because the girls I was drinking with had their older uncle was there. And I woke up in his bed. He wasn't in there, but like, I was like, oh my God, what happened? Luckily, nothing happened, but, so that kind of freaked me out, but not enough. I was like, I just need a toothbrush and I'll be good, like, just shake it off, you know? And then a few months later, I did the same thing. I drank a half-gallon bottle of Kevin Hill's vodka, and I blacked out, except I didn't pass out. I stole a lot of street signs and mailboxes, and then I woke up at school. So I'm not sure how that happened, but I got kicked out of school that day, and that's just pretty much what my drinking was like. The difference was is that, like, I suffered consequences really early. That was the first time I was put on probation. I've been on probation up until I got sober since I was 13 years old, consecutively, like, 4 different offenses. But so that's what my drinking was like, and I never cared. Like, the consequences, I thought it was cool. Like, I was like, I fit in with life, you know, like, I'm exactly who I'm supposed to be, and like, yeah, I'm getting in fights, and I'm awesome, and like, school's not important. I did play a lot of sports, which became complicated, because I didn't, not only did I not live anywhere for very long, but when I would finally get on a team, when I would be there long enough to get on a team, and I was older, I would get drug tested, and I'd get in trouble. And still, I was like, well, fine. Whatever. But even at that point, I was living a double life. Like, I would go to school, and I was so hateful to my mom. Like, I remember telling her that I needed all these things. And she was stripping at the time, and among other things. And she didn't have very much money. I remember living in, like, this duplex And, like, we had a bed that we shared, and there was no furniture in the house, and we had a TV on the box, sitting on the box that we bought it in. But I was really creative, like, that box, it opened up, and that was my dresser. Like, I had all my clothes folded and, like, put in. And so I really didn't know that anything was wrong, but I would tell her that I need all these things. Like, I'm a cheerleader, I'm on the dance team, I play softball, like, I need these uniforms, I need this money. And I would cuss her out, and as where she was absent, and she did a lot of shitty things, like, I wanted to go to a Sweet 16 black and white party, and I was like, you need some new clothes because, you know, that I deserve it. And she disappeared for a couple of days, but when she came back, she had a whole box of, like, name brand designer clothes and shoes. And there's no telling what she had to do to get those things, but she got those things for me. And but that was the interesting thing that happened once I started drinking. I went from being a caring, like, carefree child to literally, like, my whole, everything about me changed. I was materialistic, I was hateful, I didn't give a shit about anybody else but myself, and the story that I was carrying on. And so that's just kind of how my life looked like. There's a few big moments that I need to touch on because they're things that I had to work on in sobriety. For instance, my mom gave up custody of me when I was 15, and my grandparents got custody of me. And they had decent jobs at the time, and they gave me everything, like a letter jacket and a car and things like that. And so now I have all these really bad tools with, like, a lot of money. Well, not a lot of money, but more money than I was ever used to. And they didn't pay any attention to me. They were always gone or working. And so I got pregnant, and they kicked me out of their house. And the more that I thought about it, I was like, what? How am I going to bring a kid into this world? Like, I remember my mom being like, well, maybe we might have some green beans for dinner. You know what I mean? Like, not being able to feed me. And bring them in, bring in a child into all of this dysfunction. Like, I knew it was sick. And that's the thing is, like, I always wanted to be different. I didn't know how, but I always wanted to be different. I was like, I don't want to be on meth living in a trailer. Like, I want to go to college. Like, I don't really think I'm smart enough, but I want to be different. I just want to be different. And I was like, if I have a kid, like, my mom, I resent my kid like my mom resents me. And just all of these things. So, and then there was the selfish part, too, if I'm being honest with myself. There was a selfish part that was like, if I have a kid right now, I'm never going to be able to drink again. And that sucks to say out loud in front of all these people. It was easier when I said it in front of my sponsor. But that's the reality of things. I won't ever get to party again. I'll be tied down, and this is stupid. Like, I just started. And so I got an abortion, and I lied about it to my grandparents. And I moved in with my mom for a few months, and a few months later I got kicked out, and I drove across country. She was living in Gillette, Wyoming at the time. And I drove from Gillette, Wyoming to Ringgold, Georgia, not once, but three times in a matter of 2 weeks. Because all of the lying and stuff, like, I moved, my mom was like, your grandma's coming, and so I drove back 4 days later, and then I was like, screw you, you lied to me, and then I drove back again, and I was emancipated at 16, and I somehow, by the grace of God, like, I made up all my credit, because the semester after I got an abortion, I quit going to school. I skipped 76 days in one semester. I didn't do any of my classes. I was drunk when I took my ACTs. And so, yeah, that's what life is like. And then for whatever reason, I got it together that semester, that last year, my senior year. And I graduated on time. I held a job. I had an apartment. I had a car. And I was like, now I'm going to change my life. Because if I did something like that, I at least have to make it count or something. And if I make something out of myself, then it wasn't for nothing. And so that was kind of how it started. And so after I graduated high school, I bounced around for a little while. And at first I was going to go to California, and then I was going to go to Austin, Texas. And somehow I was driving past, Murfreesboro, and I had an ex-boyfriend that told me he was going to MTSU, and that's how I knew about it. So I was like, let's check out MTSU. And so I went in towards the campus, and I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And so I saved up $2,000 in Nashville. This is where it gets cool, because this is where sobriety was introduced to my life. But me getting to Nashville was such a God thing that, like, it blows my mind. Because I drove from Oklahoma, and the day before I moved, left to come down to Nashville. The lady I was supposed to be staying with down here was like, told me she, I couldn't. But I'd already quit my job, my bags were packed. And you know, I'm not gonna tell people that like I'm not leaving after I've already said bye. Like my ego is way too big for that. So I left and I didn't tell anybody, I didn't have anywhere to stay. I had like $2,000 in my bank account and I just started driving down to Nashville. Right outside of Memphis, it was like 11 o'clock at night, and there's this guy in a creeper van pumping his gas, and so naturally I'm like talking to him, and I'm like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, I have a place in Nashville I work at, and I was like, no way, I'm moving there. And he told me his receptionist just quit, and so I pulled out my letter of recommendation in the gas station parking lot outside of Memphis at 11 o'clock at night, and he gave me the job in the parking lot. So I'm quite a bit of street smart at this point, and so he gives me a business card, and I call my friend Rachel, and I'm like, look up this guy's stuff, make sure I don't get murdered, like, when I start on Tuesday, this is on a Sunday. So I started working for him. He wasn't a murderer or, like, crazy, so that was good. And I slept in my car for 5 days, off Nolensville Pike, and I worked from, like, 7 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock at night, and he was an audio engineer, and I got to meet all kinds of cool people and do all kinds of cool things. And then there was a musician that I was talking to outside, and he was talking about showering in truck stops and sleeping in their car. And so I thought he knew, right? And I was like, oh, my God, do you know where any truck stops are? Because I've been moorbathing for, like, 5 days. And he was like, why? Do you need a truck stop? And I was like, oh. I read that wrong, you know, okay, cool. So, he was like, well, I don't want to sound creepy, but you can shower at my house. And then him and his roommate told me I could crash on their couch, for the first night. And then I did for the next night. And then they were like, hey, our lease is up in a month. Why don't you just, stay here until our lease is up? And then that way I was coming down here to go to bartending school. And I did right off Donaldson Pike at bartending school. And I went to bartending school for 2 weeks, and as soon as I got out, I got a job downtown Nashville. And that is where I met Chelsea. We worked at the bar together, and it's such a God thing, because, like, you know, I remember the first night that we drank, that we hung out, we were drinking, and she was like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, but I got it under control. And I didn't know anything about AA, guys. Like, I did not know it was real. I thought it was, like, a seventh heaven, like, special. Like, I didn't know that it was real. I had no idea. Like, it sounds funny, but I really didn't know. Like, I was so clueless. And, so I was like, well, this girl's a little dramatic, but, like, it's cool. It's not a big deal. And a few months later, after partying pretty hard together, she was like, I want to go to a meeting. And I was like, I'll support you. You know, because I'm a great friend. And so we go to 202, and I remember putting things together. Like, I was like, oh, this is cool. I remember I even cried. Like, I was like, this is a great thing y'all have here. Like, that's so awesome for y'all. You know? And then there were times where I was, like, coming down off coke, and, like, I didn't have any money to go to the bar or to buy more drugs. And so I was like, let's go to a meeting. And I go to 202, and I cry. And I'd be like, I can't. No, I just want somebody to feel sorry for me. And then people would start talking to me, and I was like, no, I don't think so. And so I'd leave, and I start drinking again. I think at that time, because it was like a novel idea, like I was like, it'd be cool, so cool to say that I was like sober for a year. And I put together like 7 days, and it was the most angry 7 days of my whole entire life. Like, I was pissed. Like, I was like, this is stupid. I don't have a problem. Like, I get that meth and morphine are bad for everybody. But, like, I don't have a problem with alcohol. And I firmly, you know, they say that you can get off the elevator whenever you want to, and I firmly believe that. And I think that my higher power gave me an opportunity to get off the elevator then, and I didn't. It's just a part of my story. And so at that time, I had a car that was paid for in my name. I had an apartment. I was enrolled at MTSU. I had a bartending job downtown. Life was phenomenal compared to what I come from. You know what I mean? Like, and so that's the thing, too, is that, like, I did the whole, God was really good to me as far as, like, having me run through all these different things, being my higher power before I got sober. because my mom was my first higher power and she let me down. And I remember going through that, and then my grandparents were my higher power, and then when I got pregnant, they deserted me, and so they let me down. And then right after, when I was in my senior year of high school, I met a boy, so he's my higher power. And that was so bad. But what's interesting is I really think that it's funny how God works, because if I wouldn't have had that boyfriend when I dated him, I didn't drink or drug for 6 months straight. And I think that's the only reason why I was able to make up all my credits. I had 8 credits to make up in 1 semester, and I did it. And then the next semester, I was like back on track. But if I was still drinking and drugging, like without my head shoved up that boy's butt, like I wouldn't have done it. You know, he just happened to come from like a nice family who like had a golden retriever and didn't ever do drugs, and I was like, wow. You know, like this is cool. He was my higher power, and then he moved away to college, aka the boyfriend that went to in VSU. But as soon as he left, like the day after he left, I started drinking 151 every day and like popping pills like they were whatever those mints are called. Tic Tac, yeah, every day. And so then that didn't work out as my higher power. He let me down. So then I was my higher power, and I had all these things in Nashville. I was very self-sufficient, and that's what I thought. I was like, I can't trust anybody but myself. It's not that I didn't believe in God. I just didn't really feel like God believed in me or that I was worth it. At this point, I didn't think I was worth anything. So I got off I stayed on the elevator, and I was like, screw AA, screw y'all, I don't have a problem. That was probably in like November. And then I went like on a pretty hardcore Xanax binge, and then I started drinking every day, and then I quit my job, and I couldn't leave my apartment, so I dropped out of college. And then I screwed over my roommate and put all my shit in my car, and I drove back to Georgia, where a lot of my family lives. Now, this was in a matter of 4 months. That happened. And then from that moment, from the time I got back to Georgia until I got sober, which was only a year, I was homeless. I couldn't hold a job because drinking and like floating down the river sounded way better than going to work. And I would like scrap metal, which if y'all know me, it's funny. I would scrap metal to get like gas money or drug money. And so I lost my license, I lost my car, I was homeless. I used to drive behind the Bilo in Ringgold, Georgia, and all of my clothes were in my trunk. And there's a creek back there, and so I would have really, really expensive shampoo and conditioner and like body wash because I was stealing it. Like I still had to have the best of everything, right? And I would go down to the creek and I'd like shower and I'd change my clothes and I'd put all my stuff back in my trunk. I'd do my makeup and I'd go to a party, and nobody knew that I knew of. I mean, I'm sure everybody knew. Did you buying Milo earlier? You know, and that was what life was like for a while. And I couldn't figure out that drugs and alcohol were a problem. But that only took a year. And then when I found out that I wasn't my higher power, I had ran through all my resources and I wanted to kill myself. But I wasn't brave enough, like, thank God. But I was getting braver with every day. All of a sudden, blackouts started to freak me out. And so I had like a good 9 years of running and gunning, and the last year was when blackouts really started to freak me out. And drugs are a part of my story. I'm sorry if that offends you, call your sponsor. And if you don't have a sponsor, you have way bigger problems than me talking about drugs in my story. I just wanted to die. And for whatever reason, I woke up one morning, and I was high on crystal meth, and I drank a half bottle of Fireball. And I was having an anxiety attack, and I can't imagine why. But and I remember sitting at the table like hysterical, and I was like, "Please help me, like God, I just need help." Like not like God, like I wasn't talking to God. It was just a word that came out of my mouth. And for whatever reason, that light bulb went off, and I thought about the people in these rooms that said, "If you want a different way of life, you know we have it." and Chelsea had been calling me every month for a flipping year, and I hated her. Because she introduced me to AA. She was, like, trying to take away my best friend. And I wasn't having it. Like, I was not okay. And I don't know why. I don't know why she kept calling me. She was just like, hey, I moved to Nashville. And I'm like, you're crazy. And so, like, a month before I moved back to Nashville, she'd been calling. She's like, come sleep on my couch, come sleep on my couch, come sleep on my couch. And I was like, no, I'm going to backpack across America. I have a bike and a tent. And, like, I'll get a gun. And surely I'll end up where I need to be because it's America. Like, I'll get somewhere, and, like, that'll be my path. And she was like, you're going to die. And I was like, you're so negative. I have to go. That is a true story. So, and then it was like a week or two later when I called her, when I had that moment, and I called her, and I was like, you know, is the couch still open? And so May 13th, and so for a week, that week before I got on there was when I had my first God moment, and it was because I still had a baggie of dope left, and I was like, I'm going to get high one more time, and but something told me if I got high, I wasn't going to make it to Nashville. But I kept running up the stairs and running down the stairs and running up the stairs and running down the stairs. I'm going to get high. No, I'm not. I'm going to get high. No, I'm not. I'm going to get high. And then finally, I went upstairs to get high, and I grabbed that baggie, and before I knew what I was doing, I dumped it down the toilet. And I immediately started having a panic attack, and I was like, I need a straw. I need a straw. Like, I was going to drink the toilet bowl water, guys. I think about that now, and I'm like, oh. But I was so serious. But before I could think any further, like, my hand hit that flusher, and it was gone. And then 4 days later, I got a bus on a bus to Nashville. And I was drinking beer and smoking weed the whole time. And then I started to talk to Chelsea's apartment. And that was horrible. Because I was coming off of alcohol, daily use of alcohol, weed, morphine, and crystal meth. And I thought I was schizophrenic. Because I'm detoxing. I didn't know about treatment. I didn't know it was real. I know that I got on the bus May 13th. We picked up our silver chip at the 7 a.m. at Shade Tree. And that was the first time when I said, hi, my name's Lindsay, I'm an alcoholic. Within years, that weight had, like, been lifted off my shoulder. And I couldn't describe what that feeling was at the time, but I know what it was now. I know what it is now. And that's pretty cool. I'm like detoxing in Chelsea's apartment, and I'm like seeing things. I'm having anxiety attacks, like the shadow demons were horrible, you know. And I say those things because that is reality, you know. And I was on a bike, and I was biking to the noon meeting at 7 a.m. and 5:30, and luckily you just lived right off Stewart's Ferry. Like, that's where God put me, and I don't think that's a coincidence, you know. But I remember, I was, like, 12 days sober, and I just knew I was schizophrenic because I was, like, laying by the pool reading the big book, and I read about, like, dual diagnosis. And I was like, that's it. I got sober to find out that I'm crazy. So I went to the noon meeting hysterical, and I told y'all, I was like, I think that I'm crazy. And Dennis was like, no, you're exactly where you need to be. And I felt sane enough to not be in an insane asylum. You know, my skin was still crawling, but that was okay. Because y'all believed that I was where I was supposed to be. When I got a sponsor, I was like 4 days sober when I thought Peter was going to be my sponsor. And then y'all, like, I think that, like, you're supposed to ask a woman. And I almost quit AA because I was like, y'all told me there weren't any rules. But I stayed because I was pretty miserable. And then at 7 days sober, I was at a speaking meeting, and there was this really jolly lady at the front, and she was like, if you don't have a sponsor, come talk to me after the meeting. I was like, there's the information lady I've been looking for. And so I walked up to her, and I was like, Anna, I don't have a sponsor. And she was like, are you asking me to be your sponsor? And, like, hollered at me. And I was like, yeah, sure. And so for whatever reason, I started calling her. She started picking me up. I think, like, 2 days after she became my sponsor, we went to Southern Thrift, and that's when I met Lacey. And then like 3 days after she became my sponsor, I did not know she was the events chair of my home group. So then there was the fish fry. And that was, and she was like, yeah, you're going to show up early and like do all this stuff. And I stood in the bathroom and I like played with my hair and I was like, how can I get out of this? And, but I stayed for whatever reason. I didn't know anybody to call me and take an emergency. And I was like, well, I don't have anything else to do. And I'm really grateful that I stayed because after the fish fry was over, I stood there and I looked at everything that I had just been a part of. And for the first time in my life, I felt like maybe I wasn't such a horrible person because I was a tiny bit responsible. And that did wonders for me. And then so the next day we went to a ladies bonfire and I was like, here's where the cult happens. Like here is like, I think I said it in the meeting the other day, but I really thought it. I was like, here's the chanting and like the bloodshed of the goats and like, you know, I was like, this is where they get you. I also wanted to get drunk really badly. And it wasn't like that at all. They had like s'mores and coffee. And then we had a meeting. And that was the first time I met Lois. And I was really pissed off and everybody else seemed to be really happy. And they let me share about it and about how I wanted to get high and I wanted to get drunk. And they let me cry and they were still laughing. And then they gave me some chocolate and they were like, and then, you know, like, see you tomorrow. And so that was really good. And then about 30 days into sobriety, I moved into Lois's state. And for like $100 a month, and again, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself because I was going to be homeless in like a week. Like, Chelsea was, you know, changing houses and all this stuff, and so I needed a place to stay. And Lois was like, yeah, my sponsor told me I should get a roommate. And so I'm like living in her basement, and if it wasn't for her, I like, of course, because I was always going to meetings, and that was the first time I really slept in sobriety because you have to remember I was so used to chaos and being unsafe and always having to be alert, and I could never be relaxed, and I could never be comfortable. And when I got to her house, I was like, my body was so rigid, and I just couldn't go to sleep. And she like just bebopped by, and she was like, hey, sweetie, you're safe. And then, like, walked off. Like, she was just saying it for God only knows what reason. God was speaking through her because then for the first time in sobriety, I slept. I fell asleep, and I really slept. And then she taught me that I could be good at music sober because I was terrified that, like, I couldn't sing sober. I don't know why. It was like I was afraid that I was going to open my mouth, but she did music, so I was like, I could just tell her. And so we went to this cool, like, sober function where they were playing, and they were like, is anybody else playing? And I was like, yeah, I'm singing. And he was like, well, sing it, girl. And so I sang, and Lois was like, what the fuck? You live under my butt. Like, why did I not know this? And so early sobriety was really cool. Young and Sober also started about 30 days. Sober and... Having friends my age changed my whole entire perception of AA. And so then I started working the steps, and I changed sponsors in the middle of that, and because I got to step two and then I kind of stalled out. And what happened when I stalled was I like found a boy that was nice to me, not in the program, because nobody in the program would like talk to me. No boys in the program would like date me. Thank God. But I found a boy that was nice to me, and so I got him to take him to the lake, and then I convinced him to be my boyfriend. I made out with him, called my then to that was my future sponsor at the time, and then I went to a meeting, and then I broke up with him, and all within 6 hours. So, you know, that's fun. And then that's when they told me that my sobriety was my responsibility, and that if I wasn't working the steps, I needed to do something about it. And that's when Marcia became my sponsor, and we started working the steps. And step four was something that I didn't pay attention to in the meetings when y'all talked about it. I'm not detail oriented, guys. I don't pay attention to anything. But it served me well. Like it really has served me well because I wasn't scared. I didn't know that the fourth step was scary until I was halfway through it. And I just didn't like the way that I felt. But I was already halfway through it. So I was like, well, I guess I'll be done. you know, I guess I'll just do it. And then I did my fifth step, and I'm used to people abandoning me my whole entire life. And so, and being a self-sabotager, I was like, well, I'm going to go in and I'm going to tell her all these awful things about myself. And then she's going to leave. And it's better now than later. And so I walked into her house and I started just pouring my heart out, all this four-step stuff, and she did not leave. She laughed with me, and she cried with me, and she loved me. And that was the first experience I had in my whole life that a woman had ever really loved me. That didn't abandon me when things got harder and got difficult. And that was crazy. And then that relief when that fifth step happens, right? And it's the first time in my life that I've ever felt serenity. And I freaked out. Like, I was in a meeting and I was like, I don't know what's wrong. Nothing is wrong. And y'all did exactly that, and y'all laughed, and y'all knew. And y'all knew exactly what I was talking about, and you're like, it's fine. You know, and y'all shared y'all's experience, strength, and hope, and I felt better. Also about this same time, a little bit before that, and I try to share this every time I tell my story because it was something that if I didn't talk about, I would have gotten drunk. I was sexually abused from the time that I was 6 until I was 10 years old by my cousin, almost on a daily basis. And I just acted like I was asleep, and like it never happened. And when I got sober, those were things that I had to deal with. All those emotions and those memories and those things that I couldn't drink away anymore. And I had to open up, and that was my first experience at a women's meeting. Because I talked to my sponsor and I walked in and I shared about it. And the beautiful thing about it is that I shared and I felt really gross. I felt really, really gross. But after that, there was a woman who I hadn't seen since then. But she told me that the same thing happened to her, except she was like 7 years old. And she had never shared that with anybody her whole entire life. But because I shared about it, she felt comfortable enough to tell me about it. And just to have that moment of relief to let something like that go to another person, it's huge. But I mean, I can feel the relief. Like, it's amazing. I can't even describe it. So then the sixth step was really hard for me, which is funny because it's not, I mean, like, you just pray a lot with my understanding of it. So the 6 and 7 was pretty hard. And then 7 and 8, you know, I don't know. I know the 9th step has been the most beautiful experience to me. And through the process of working in steps, my life was changing. I was no longer living in Melissa's basement. I had a roommate at the time. Me and Chelsea started rooming together. I changed jobs. I got a good paying job. So as I was working the steps, my life was changing, and I was learning how to deal with all of the irritations of growing up in, like, the real world, because I couldn't stomp my feet and fight any longer if I wanted to be a productive member of society. And for whatever reason, that sounded desirable to me, kind of, you know? But y'all told me if I didn't do all these things, like, if I wasn't honest, I wasn't going to stay sober. If I kept my old behaviors, I wasn't going to stay sober. And I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to do any of those things and more than I wanted to get high. And I don't know why it happened that way, it just did. But the 9th step is the most beautiful experience I've ever had every single time. I made amends to my grandfather. And when I got pregnant, like, he wouldn't talk to me. He wouldn't look at me. And I totally screwed over that relationship. But when I made amends to him, you know, we have a great relationship today. I made amends to my grandmother, who I couldn't stand. I couldn't see her, and she did that on her own. Like, I remember I made amends to my grandma, and I was like, or my papa, and I was like, okay, we'll get to my grandma in like 3 years. I'm not going to see that bitch for a long time. And then God was like, okay, girl, let me show you something. And I'm serious. It was like a week after I had that thought, and she just pops up in Nashville. She's like, oh my God, I'm 30 miles away from your job. And I freaked out. And so I, like, picked her up. We went to the fish fry. And my grand sponsor had to tell me. She was like, who cares? God has a different plan than you have for yourself today. Get over it. But here's what you're going to do. You're here to do service work. You're going to come here. You're going to do service work. You're going to go to a meeting. You're going to finish your service work. And then you're going to take your grandma home to your house where she's going to spend the night. You're going to get up in the morning, make amends to her, and then she's going to go home. And that's what I did. Except right before I made amends to her, I kept thinking, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. But I've been praying and meditating about it. And all of a sudden, it was like I bent down to like grab, or I looked down to get my coffee, and when I looked back up, I felt the ice like melt away from my heart. And I saw her as a person for the first time since I was a little girl. And I knew, like I loved her, like out of nowhere, like I loved her. Like this isn't, I mean, these experiences aren't anything that you will get the true meaning of by me telling you, like you have to experience it, like don't stall out because it's not that scary. It is so beautiful. My mom doesn't touch me. Like, she's not loving. And when I made amends to her, she held my hand all the way to the airport. We're on my way back. And when I got to Nashville, I think my mom held my hand. And that seems like such a small thing. But, like, for me, that's such a big thing. And I've gotten so much love in Alcoholics Anonymous that it's not even funny. Like, I can't imagine going anywhere else. You know, when y'all looked at me, and me and Lois were listening to a speaker tape, Charlie S. from Savannah, and he was like, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they said, welcome home. And I could feel the sun on my skin that day, like, sitting on the porch, and I knew. Like, I literally ran to the 10 o'clock, and I was like, guys, I know what it is. I know what this feeling is that I haven't been able to describe. I'm home. And I've never had a home before. I've never had real friends that cared about me, that were going on the same journey like I do with Young and Sober, and like all the other young adults that I've met trudging this road. You know, I have gone through some things in sobriety that I never thought that I was going to be able to make it through. It doesn't make sense to me. But it doesn't have to logically make sense to me. This is a spiritual program. I just have to feel it, and I have to do it. And if I do it, I get the results. And that's been true for me. I have sponsees, and I do service work. And service work has taught me things that I never would have learned otherwise. Nobody was going to teach me how to use like Excel spreadsheets or be a part of a team or anything like that. And service work has taught me that. Service work has taught me how to care about other people. Having sponsees has taught me that it's not all about myself. You know, newcomers coming in the room has taught me that it's not all about myself. And today, I am fully self-supporting. I live in my own apartment. I have a car, but it's broken down, but I'm going car shopping tomorrow. I held a job for a year and a half, which I don't have that job today, literally as of today. But what's cool is that I got a new job last week, making more money than, I think the only person who makes as much money as I'll be making is my grandfather, because everybody in my family is like factory workers and bartenders and meth heads and traders. And there's nothing wrong with that. I can love them today. Like, that's crazy. That is crazy. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I told my drug and alcohol assessor, I was like, I could put a gun to my mom's head and pull the fucking trigger and not blink. Did not feel bad about it. And that can be farther from the truth today. I can suit up and show up for my family. Doesn't mean I have to be there, but I can still love them. And I've learned to like walk through fear today. Like, I turned in my 2 weeks notice today, and they let me go. But I didn't panic. I didn't freak out. Like, I was so calm. And I was like, well, God's got me. It feels weird, and it feels weird. It just feels weird. I don't like feelings, you know. But it just happens. And it's so cool because I'm not like hysterical and super emotional mess. And I've had to watch people get high. And I've had to watch people go in and out of these rooms since I got here. And it's true. Like, you stick around long enough and people will get drunk for you to stay sober. People will die so you don't have to die. And I don't care that I have to look at it selfishly like that, because if I had to choose today, I would not go back for anything. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me so much. It has fulfilled my life and my heart so much that I feel like I'm awake for the first time in my whole entire life, and I don't want to check out. The thought of checking out crossed my mind the other day, and I thought I was going to throw up. Because being obliviated no longer sounds like a good idea. Even in life hasn't been that great. I mean, it's been great, but it hasn't been easy. I always want things to be easy, and it's not. But I don't ever have to go through that alone. I'm not ever alone today. I can talk to people about things, and all of my issues and all the things that I'm literally getting to learn how to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 23 years old. I've been sober for a year and 10 months. And when I say that I'm a completely different person than I was a year and 10 months ago, it blows my mind. And so, yeah, I'm just really glad all of y'all are here. I love every single one of y'all. And that's all I got.